Greetings and welcome to another edition of Soundography, Crash Course in Music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
Today we are diving back into country. We do tend to do about one country singer episode or country band or country performer episode per season, and you just happen to tune into this one. Today we're going to be talking about American singer and songwriter and spitfire with a lot of spunk, I don't know, Reba McEntire.
Giant worm killer.
You picked the wrong basement. That's right. So I feel like I just need to kind of get this, like, we need to get this out first before we go too far into the show, because there might be a fan of Reba McEntire that's listening, and my, what I'm about to say might make them decide whether or not they want to listen to the rest of the show. But I am not a fan of Reba McEntire's music. And people who know me and listen to the show know that I'm not a fan. I'm not a big fan of modern country anyway. I really like stuff like George Jones and Hank Williams and Willie Nelson and even some Kenny Rogers and stuff like that, as well as some of the other country artists that we've covered in previous seasons. But what I don't enjoy about Reba's music, I think, is probably a bigger issue than just Reba herself. And it was very difficult for me to find even five songs to put in my playlist. I came up with five songs, but up until yesterday afternoon, it was going to be a two-song playlist, and I was going to show up and basically shrug my virtual shoulders and say, "Yep, I came up with two. That's all I can stand."
Okay. So. You and I are not that far off. I'm going to say that I colored my picks and this week with the fact that she's a hard worker. She seems like she's an amazing person. I really like her voice, but all the albums are just this formulaic ballad, mid-tempo thing, ballad, mid-tempo story song about a woman overcoming something or waking up drunk or whatever.
Right,
and
right.
It's 29 albums of that. And after a while, you're just like, oh, I can't do another country ballad. I love her voice, but I just can't do it.
Yeah, and I think part of it is, for me anyway, again, coming back to this, is that I never feel like I get a sense of who Reba McEntire is going album to album. And I think that's because it's usually maybe one, maybe even none. None of the songs are written by Reba on every album. You get a lot of different people who write her music. And it's even a lot of people all through the album. Like Heart to Heart, her 1981 album, has 10 different songs, all written by different people. Each song, like, there's not even consistency between song two and song five as far as who writes it. It's all different. And I think because of that, it doesn't give you a sense of who she is as a performer. And I can say, hey, she's a great singer. She's got a great voice. I'm not a big fan of that, the writing style of like the up-tempo song where the chorus is da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then the music stops and she says the name of the song and then the music starts back up again. And I think, like, there's, I think 90% of those up-tempo songs are her doing that, is her doing that.
When I read your note when you said that, I couldn't help but giggle because it's so true.
It really is. It's almost like a formula.
It's almost like the Reba McEntire bingo card we could start.
Yes. Well, and I kind of did that. Tina and I listened to a lot of her albums together this last week.
Why would you put her through that? She already has a broken foot.
I know. And she even brought that up. She's like, boy, you know, I must really love you if I'm listening to this stuff with you. I'm like, hey, I'm not enjoying it either.
So it was basically, I have a friend and she has this thing where she talks about how there's type one fun and type two fun. Yeah. And type two fun is where you enjoy what you're doing. You enjoy who you're doing it with, but you don't enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you guys were in partaking in, is type two fun.
I think that's totally right. Yep. It's totally, totally right. And, you know, again, I'm certainly not slighting Reba herself, because I do think that she's talented. I feel like she, just never really connect with who she is as a performer. And it's that kind of modern country backdrop where if you pulled her vocals out and stuck Shania Twain's vocals in, I'd kind of have the same problem with it. If you pulled her vocals out and stuck Faith Hill's vocals in or Carrie Underwood's, I feel like you'd run into the same problem. The songs are written so...
generically, shall we say
generically
that?
Formula, yeah, that anybody could sing them and have the same result.
Yeah, and it's weird for me to say this because, I mean, she's got accolades out the wazoo. And yeah, she's talented, yeah, and she's funny on our TV show, and she's, you know,
great in Tremors, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everything beyond what we're saying is good, and yes, people love her and admire her and all that kind of stuff. And even I did until I did a week of her.
I know, yeah.
And now after a week, I'm like, how can people do this? It's so weird to say this. I mean, I, at one point, was willing to go back and do Level 42 again.
Wow. Okay. That's strong words, Hannon. Holy cow. No, but I do see what you mean. I totally see what
Brian
you mean.
Brian texted me and said, let's do Dream Theater.
Right. I know, right? Sure. No. So that's kind of the whole setup prior to the getting into the discography and her history and stuff. I don't slight a person who enjoys her music. Good for you. I'm glad you're able to find something that I didn't find. That I'm glad you were able to connect with it in a way that I couldn't.
Yes.
And glad you enjoy it. More for you.
And to be really, really honest, this is of all the seasons we've done, this is the first time that we've had the unanimous hard time.
Yeah, it's true.
And even then, this is kind of what Soundography is all about. It's mm-hmm. us doing these challenges week to week and sometimes coming out completely shocked and amazed that it's more amazing than we thought. Or sometimes it's half and half. This is one of those rare times where it was a struggle. And
yeah,
I mean, this is what Soundography kind of is. It's a challenge for us. It's a challenge for on the artist to be able to kind of put up. And mm-hmm. so be warned, this is just our opinions. This is not doctrine. This is not gospel. This is just me and Brian talking after a week of wading through Rebo.
That's right. Yes. Okay, cool. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into this and start with the history and discography of Reba McEntire. Of course, as I mentioned, she's an American singer and songwriter. She's appeared in movies. She's had her own TV sitcom. She's also worked as a record producer as well. Her mother taught her how to sing, and she sang in her high school marching band. She taught herself how to play guitar. In college, she sang the national anthem at the National Rodeo in Oklahoma City. It caught the attention of another artist who invited her to Nashville. In 1975, she signed a contract, and in 1977, she released her first solo album. That album was released with her brother and one of her sisters, and they formed the Singing McEntires, and they perform as the Singing McEntires at rodeos. Released in 1976, her first single was I Don't Want to Be a One Night Stand. It only made it up to number 88 on the country charts. Her second single only reached 86, and her third only also number 88. In 1977, she released her first full album. It was called Reba McEntire. It was more similar to Tanya Tucker and Tammy Wynette than anything that she would release later, but it did fail to chart as well. 1979, she released Out of a Dream, which featured a Patsy Cline cover that ended up being her first top 20 hit. It's kind of a good sign of things to come. 1980, she released Feel the Fire, which included the song You Lift Me Up to Heaven and brought her into the top 10. For the first time. It also produced two other top 20 singles.
So here's the thing that I wanted to bring up at this point is, yeah, I don't know if record labels would have the kind of patience to go three albums in and watch someone develop anymore.
Yeah, right.
The kind of dedication to and belief in somebody isn't like it used to be. I mean, she had three albums that were kind of, I mean, they got incrementally better, but I mean, nowadays, I feel like if you don't, it's like movies. If you don't have a big opening weekend, you're done.
Yeah, exactly. No, and producers, it feels like producers these days would be like, oh yeah, two albums, we're going to go ahead and let you go. Thanks for playing and move along. So the fact that back in the late 70s, early 80s, they were able to say, all right, well, let's keep, you know, maybe change this up or maybe add this or maybe do this and get some different results. Apparently was the way to go for her, for sure.
Yeah, no, it was. It's nice seeing the album give her the chance to mature.
Yeah, definitely. 1981, she released Heart to Heart. This was the first album to chart on the Billboard Country Album charts. The single Today All Over, Today All Over Again, was a top five hit.
So easy, falling for somebody new. But I must be going about it all.
The album was not reviewed well and came off as filled with country-styled pop ballads. Reba reportedly didn't like it much either herself.
Which is weird, because isn't that what she did for the next, like, 35 years?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You wonder what the difference was between how she perceived Heart to Heart versus how she perceived some of the newer stuff.
Yeah, because I can't tell a difference between the 81 album and the 2001 album. As far as content, slickness of production. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. In 1982, she released the album Unlimited. Can't Even Get the Blues was her first number one single.
Seems like every time you leave me, you try to think of something worse. I can't even get the blues no more.
You're the First Time I've Thought About Leaving was also a hit for her the next year. And again, we're in the stage where it's a new album, at least a new album every year, in a couple cases, two albums in a year. 1983, she released Behind the Scene, which gained positive reviews. It actually marked her last album with Mercury Records. She didn't like the country pop production styles that Mercury had, so she left.
She went to go try different pop country stylings.
That's right. 1984, Just a Little Love. The singles from this album were the title track, as well as He Broke Your Memory Last Night. And I think now's a good time to bring up this other recurring theme. a lot of these songs told, you know, third person story songs, lots of them, at least two or three per album.
She really enjoys the storytelling song, except she builds them on like four tropes, and you're going to bring up all of them in one sentence.
Yeah, I am. It's like heavy drinking, divorce, divorce and child support or child, like trading off the child and stuff. But the biggest trope are the titles. He Broke Your Memory Last Night, The Day She Got Divorced, She Turned 50 Today. Like it's
I'm not going to be a one night stand.
Right. Well, at least that one's in the first person.
That's true. She's not going to be a one night stand.
Right. That would be the more appropriate one. But it seems like every album had like an example of this, a song that was like, He Broke Your Memory Last Night, or I'm just going to kind of zip through a couple of these. Let's see. She's the One Loving You Now.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. And in fact, if they come up, I might end up trying to stick this trope alert in there.
Yeah, there you go. Geez, there you go. Perfect. Perfect. In 1984, she released her next album, My Kind of Country. This was her first album with MCA Records. She, again, didn't like the way the album sounded, and she told the president of MCA to find material that was better suited to her and her liking. So this is kind of speaks to what we've been saying. Like, it's not necessarily anything but the material that she's given that I think is the big problem.
Yeah.
And she's recognizing that as well. Did she, you know, at that point in 1984, did she say, all right, now I've found the right material for me? Or was it she was starting to get accolades. She was starting to get awards and recognition. And she says, all right, well, I may not be as happy with the direction I'm going or the material that I'm doing, but it's doing well for me. And so maybe I shouldn't be so critical.
Maybe. And without walking a mile in her shoes, we'll never know. But I mean, sure. The fact that she's on, we're what, 25 minutes into this, and she's already complained about the styles like three times.
Yes.
It means that she knows that something is not clicking personally.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't know if she gets to a point where she just throws her hands up and just realizes, well, if I can't make it click for me, I'll make it click for somebody.
Right.
Or if at some point she settles in and realizes, no, I'm happy now.
Yeah, maybe. And maybe that is the case. Maybe that's the case. More about the 1984 album. She found songs to cover for this album. Reba was praised as the finest woman country singer since Kitty Wells. High praise indeed. She had two number one singles, How Blue and Somebody Should Leave. This was the highest charting album of hers to date. The instrumentation was more aimed at traditional country. 1985, Have I Got a Deal for You? That was the title of the album, the first album that she herself was a producer on. Only in My Mind was the second single and was entirely written by Reba, something that we hadn't seen a lot of prior to this. In January of 1986, she actually became a member of the Grand Ole Opry. 1986, the album Whoever's in New England, which I kind of liked. I kind of like the vibe of it, like, hey, why do you keep taking these business trips to New England? To Boston. Again, another album that she co-produced. She showed a mix of traditional musical style and a more mainstream sound. It was very different from anything else that she had done prior. Country Music The Rough Guide called the production of the title track bigger and sentimentalism more obvious, even manipulative, but it peaked at number one and it won a Grammy.
The
album was eventually certified platinum.
When you manipulate somebody, usually you get something you want, and she wanted a Grammy and she got it.
That's right. There you go. In 1986, she released What Am I Gonna Do About You, her second album of that year. AllMusic critic William Ruhlman was not overly pleased with the album's production, saying that it lacked the features that had been set forth on prior albums. So it's funny, you know, she's complaining about the production. She's complaining about the material. AllMusic critic doing the same kind of thing. It's an uneven library,
yeah,
for sure.
It is. And I think that's a great way of putting it, because either you love it through and through.
Yeah.
Or you, it's rare to find just one or two. Like, I have one or two songs, and that's, I feel like I'm a rarity.
Yeah. Right. The title track of What Am I Going to Do About You was another number one hit for her. Later in 1986, her first Greatest Hits album was released, and it was her first album to be certified platinum and eventually was listed as triple platinum. The next year, The Last One to Know, 1987, the album was an outlet for Reba's emotions that she was experiencing during her divorce from Charlie Battles. And you got to see a lot of songs about divorce at this point, maybe even a little bit before, but boy, after this.
Yeah, when they say it's a channeling emotions, it was pretty much a journal.
Which is interesting, because again, I didn't see a lot of those songs being written by her. So I wonder if she gives the writers some direction and says, hey, here's the kind of stuff that I'm going through right now. Maybe write a song about this. But usually even then she gets a writing credit, or artists would get a writing credit.
Or maybe what happens is she's presented with a bunch of songs that have certain themes to them. And she calls through and collects all the ones about love lost and personal pain, and then does an album.
I'll bet you that's exactly right. Good call. Title track from this album was also a number one single in 1987. The Last One to Know. And the second single, Love Will Find Its Way to You, also reached the top spot. Later that year, she released her Christmas album, our first Christmas album, Merry Christmas to You, sold 2 million copies in the United States.
It's a whole lot of Christmas music to sell.
It's a lot of Christmas music, and it's not even her only Christmas album.
I know.
The next year, she released her album just titled Reba. This one wasn't received well by critics, who claimed that she was moving further away from her traditional country sound.
Which, okay.
I, I don't know how that's not happening, but
she hasn't really established her sound. She's been bouncing from traditional country pop back and forth through all these other albums. So comparing one album to the next is really hard because it's like she's a flag in the wind sometimes when it comes to her style. The only thing that's consistent is her voice.
Maybe the critics were thinking that those first couple albums defined her path and her role. And when she started changing, she never really found her center again.
Maybe.
You know, like she went one direction too far this way or one direction too far that way or whatever.
Wouldn't she go? Wouldn't 98 Degrees be more fitting? One Direction just seems too contemporary.
I knew as soon as I said that it was gonna come up.
Well, you would have been disappointed in me if I hadn't, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So that album, Reba, was a number one hit for, in spite of these negative reviews we're talking about. I Know How He Feels and New Fool at an Old Game, both were number one singles. Also in 1988.
And I was going to say similar themes that we've discussed, just so you know.
Yeah. How he feels, yes. Also in 1988, McIntyre founded Starstruck Entertainment, which controlled her management, her booking, publishing, promotion, publicity, accounting, ticket sales, and even her fan club administration. The company would eventually expand into managing a horse farm, a jet charter service, trucking, construction, and book publishing. It's like Kirkland for Costco. Cheese and jeans.
Toilet paper and chili.
Right, exactly. In 1989, Sweet 16 came out. It spent, appropriately enough, 16 weeks at number one on the charts. It also broke into the Billboard Top 200 albums, hitting number 78. It was well-reviewed and welcomed a return of traditional instrumentation and sound. It produced four singles, Kathy's Clown, Till Love Comes Again, Little Girl, and Walk On.
When your troubles knock you down, pick yourself up off the ground and walk on, walk on. Nothing ever stays wrong that long. Walk on, walk on.
And was followed that same year by a live album, Reba Live.
The original title.
That's right. 1990, she released Rumor Has It, kind of more towards pop, a very pop-oriented album. Critics called it very predictable. You Lie, Fancy, and Fallen Out of Love were top 10 singles from that one.
And this is one of the ones that I liked. Maybe I like predictable, Reba. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. 1990, though, saw the tragic tour bus accident that killed eight members of her band.
No, this wasn't a bus. It was a plane.
That's right. Yep. Knew that as soon as I read the word pilot, plus the pilot and co-pilot. The charter plane crashed near San Diego, and Reba wasn't with the band at the time, but she said, of course, that it was like losing part of your family. The next year, she released For My Broken Heart. Appropriately enough, the album was dedicated to her deceased road band, and it dealt with themes of love, loss, sorrow, and all measure of suffering. It totally did. You hear this album and knowing the story behind it, you can absolutely notice a turn. And I think a couple more songs in there that are written by Reba.
Yeah. Yeah. This was there wasn't an upbeat on this one too much.
No. And I can't imagine trying to do that less than a year after what happened. Turned in a spectacular vocal performance with a terrific song on Buying Her Roses, a wife's head-spinning discovery of her husband's other woman. And she also covered The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia, originally by Vicki Lawrence.
Which is, every time that's said, I still giggle because I only think of Vicki Lawrence as Carol Burnett. Yeah, and Mama's House or Mama's Family.
Right. You know how Vicki Lawrence got that job, by the way?
How?
She performed there was some sort of Carol Burnett lookalike contest and Vicki Lawrence won and sent in her headshot in a letter to Carol Burnett as like just a big fan. And I won the Carol Burnett lookalike contest in my local town or something like that. And, maybe even she sent a tape of her performance as Carol Burnett. I don't know. But then, Carol brought her in for an audition and put her on the show.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
with Harvey Korman and Tim Conway. Next album was 1992's It's Your Call. This was her first album to break into the top 10 of the Billboard Top 200. They Won't Lie and Take It Back were country top 10 hits, and this one was certified double platinum. In 1993, she released her second greatest hits album called, okay, I hope you're sitting down, Greatest Hits, Volume 2.
Oh, no. No, she didn't.
way to think outside the box. It reached number one on the country charts and number five on the Billboard Top 200. She sold more than 183,000 copies during Christmas week 1993. And there were two new singles added on to the album, Does He Love You and They Asked About You.
Again, following the tropes, but that's a whole lot of Reba sold during the week of Christmas.
Lots of Reba, 183,000. Crazy. As of right now, this collection has sold more than 10 million copies worldwide, and it is it stands as her best-selling album ever. 1994, Read My Mind came out, contained five major country hits. This album hit number two on the country chart and on the Billboard charts.
So this album does the – I mean, the whole album does it, but She Thinks His Name Was John is a pretty good reflection of the mood of the middle class that she was trying to represent in the 90s. The song was eventually spawned as a single, but and it was considered controversial because of what it dealt with. It dealt with a woman who contracted AIDS after a one-night stand, which, I mean, that's pretty heavy topic matter, subject matter for Reba after all kind of the other light kind of country fare mm-hmm. she'd been dealing with. And even right, though she's right. dealing with songs of love and loss, it's still very country-themed. This one had a message and a point to it that she hadn't kind of had before.
Oh, it totally did. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That's a pretty strong one for sure. And, so different from the stuff, and maybe, you know, she was getting material and she was saying, okay, this one's kind of heavy, but let's do it for sure.
Maybe she really wanted to draw attention to something that had affected her life somewhere privately or maybe. Drawing attention to some growing thing in her own circle of influence. I don't know, but it was fine, but it was just seems kind of out of left field.
Yeah, for sure. Trying to look at some of the other tracks on here. Will He Ever Go Away? The Heart Won't Lie with Vince Gill.
Will He Ever Go Away? The theme song for every house guest I've had.
Right? Yeah, maybe. next one, I'm sorry, 3 million copies had sold by the end of 1995. The album contained a good mixture of soul, swing, and pop. Really was a crossover album. Her next one, 1995 Starting Over, was an all-cover album, and it was some of her favorite songs from the 50s to the 80s. Again, not reviewed well, but it sold pretty well. Ring on Her Finger, Time on Her Hands, originally by Lee Greenwood. That was the only top 10 single released from this album.
What would have happened if Beyonce had covered that instead of put a ring on it?
Yeah, I don't know. that's funny. it would be a very different, world. Basically, yeah. Let's see. 1996, What If It's You? The first three singles released from this album were all hit singles. One review said it was an excellent reminder of her deep talents as a vocalist. Another
hang on. So that's that review right there says buckets about Reba.
It does.
It says it reminds us about her vocals and her. It says nothing about the songs.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. Like no one's saying, oh, these are fantastic songs. They're saying, yep, we're reminded that she's an amazing vocalist. And she is. She's a very talented mm-hmm. vocalist.
Yep.
Another review called her the top female country artist of the 90s. And this album, What If It's You, reached number one on the country charts and number 15 on the Billboard charts. She's climbing up. Along with that, she toured with Brooks and Dunn in 1997, which led to a collaboration the next year. The song If You See Him was released on Reba's next album as the title track, and If You See Her was released on their album, Brooks and Dunn's album. The albums were both released on the same day.
So I've seen the notes, so I know the answer to this now.
Yes.
But are there more examples of crossovers like this?
So not to that degree, not to the degree of like If You See Him and If You See Her, which I think is a pretty unique situation, having those two songs come out like that. But Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson, you know, The Girl Is Mine came out on Thriller, and Say, Say, Say came out on Paul McCartney's album at the same time. And
did they come out the same day?
I don't know if they came out the same day. That's probably not. I think Say, Say, Say came out later, but not much later. I mean, okay. The Girl Is Mine came out with Thriller.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long after that Say, Say, Say was.
No, that's
released.
A very good one. But are there others? Can you think of anything else?
There's got to be. I don't know, but the same day is a key thing right there too.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, the fact that the songs are named similarly, but then also the fact that they're, you know, that they're released the same day.
No, it's a very unique situation, and your Paul McCartney, Michael Jackson is a very good example, but I can't think of any other like close-knit collaborations like that. So it was basically a really well-planned publicity stunt for the two of them.
It was, and it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Worked well. So speaking of that album, 1998's If You See Him, the album's collaborations were a way for both acts to gain attention because they were no longer country's quote-unquote young guns, and her album reached the top 10 on both the country and the Billboard charts.
They're like young guns too, because, you know, Blaze of Glory and all.
Sure, sure. In 1999, she released the album So Good Together. Three singles released from this album, showed on the cover with a leather jacket. This album brought her
come on, Brian, read your full note. I will put a beep in there just because it's funny.
Okay, my note says, ooh, leather jacket. Reba means fucking business now. The album brought her into the top 40 of the Billboard Hot 100 for the first time, peaking at number 31. The album mostly ballads. So not really even going with that leather jacket. You expect it to be all barn burners, right?
Yeah.
The secret of
poser.
Giving her, what's that?
Poser.
Right. The Secret of Giving, her second Christmas album, was also released this year. Sold over 500,000 copies in the U.S.
You know, she must have released it like in January then, but to sell that much.
What?
No, I'm kidding. No, I'm just. It's,
I know.
If she, think about selling 500,000 copies if it was released like November 1st. I don't right. remember when it was released, but. She can move some albums.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I'm going to guess Black Friday, like right around Black Friday. It seems like if you're going to release a Christmas album, that's right.
I feel like I need to start making t-shirts that just say Reba on it so people will buy them.
Okay.
No, so
can we do that legally?
Something that says this is not a Reba shirt. And just because it says Reba, it'll be sold.
Right. Or just little tiny letters under the big word Reba. Reba Frankenstein or something like that. You know, like some Finkelberg or something like that.
Reba, anyway. Tiny letters, not McIntyre.
Right. 2001 saw the release of her third greatest hits album. When this album was certified gold, it made her the most certified female country singer in music history. I'm a Survivor was her last major hit for 2 years, and she'd go on a temporary hiatus, but, you know, she went on to do her TV show, which was called Reba. This was one of the biggest gaps album-wise. It's like 4 years between studio albums here. And it's funny because it's not like her to let a year go by that she doesn't release an album.
Yeah, even in the post-2000 gaps, she still was pretty prolific.
For sure. 2003, she released Room to Breathe. I'm Gonna Take That Mountain was Reba's 76th chart single. Intimidating wall of rock. If you think this broken heart will break my will, I'm gonna take that mountain. Ain't nothing gonna slow me down. And there and this is her first release of new material, like I said, in about 4 years. The album contained a variety of styles that again charted well on both the country and the Billboard charts. The single Loving Every Minute was her 31st number one single overall.
Wait, she covered Loverboy?
Yeah, I was thinking that too. That's Loving Every Minute of it. Different song, but I was hoping. There were a few songs like this that I'd see in the titles and be like, oh, this would be cool if she's like covering Consider Me Gone by Sting. That would be awesome.
Yep.
We'll talk about covers later too. She then has two more singles from this album that went number one as well. And right, kind of appropriately enough, 2 years later, 2005, she released Reba's Number Ones. It was an album that contained all 33 number one hit singles of her career. Also contained two new songs, and
which is brilliant to do that, so people are forced to buy it if they're completists.
I'm the same way. Like you give me a Squeeze Greatest Hits album, you throw one new song in there, or even like a remix of one older song, and I'll still probably buy it.
It's the only reason I bought Spock Spirit's Greatest Hits is because they had that one brand new 25-minute song on there.
25-minute song? That's like seven Reba McEntire songs. let's see. Two nominations in 2005, 2008, and 2009 for CMA's Country Music Awards. She had a total of 48 nominations in her 43-year career to this point, which surpassed Dolly Parton. Oh, no, that's total. Yeah. 43 years. Crazy. 2007, she released Reba Duets. She stated that out of all the albums that she had previously recorded, her newest release was particularly special. She said, "This is an album that will go down in history as probably my favorite album to record because I got to work and sing and be with my friends. Out of everything this whole career that I can say that I'm the most proud of are my friends, and here's the proof."
It's a weird collection of people. It's weird because it crosses not just country time, and it crosses genres.
It does. A lot of pop crossovers and even older pop crossovers. Mm-hmm. People like Kelly Clarkson, who was her daughter-in-law, Justin Timberlake, Carole King, Leanne Rimes, and Trisha Yearwood.
I kept waiting for like Gene Simmons and Rob Zombie to show up just to complete the weirdness of the genre covers.
You did get, was it Don Henley on this one, I believe?
I think it was.
And I think you can pretty much, if you announce that you're going to make a duets album, I think Don Henley's Google Alerts goes off. And he automatically sends a request that he's got to be on it.
Yeah.
Hold you, these lips wanna kiss you, these eyes are glad to see you, and baby I miss you. Let's drive.
Let's see here. I was just looking to confirm that that year she then went on tour with Kelly Clarkson.
Is that weird to go touring with your daughter-in-law?
I think that'd
be weird.
I mean, well, I don't know. I mean, daughter-in-law, yeah, because, I mean, you know, her son probably went on the tour with the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, I mean, if there's any disputes, he's like, there's no winning for him.
Yeah.
Like, it's his mom and it's his wife. It's like, oh,
could you just imagine,
whose side do I take?
Hey, honey, where do you want to go eat? And both of them answer. One says Olive Garden, the other says KFC, and then he's got to figure out who to make happy.
I could guess who said KFC. well played, sir. In 2008, she recorded Cowgirls Don't Cry. It was her 56th top 10 country hit. She left MCA Records, and while she'd been with them, she had sold 67 million albums. MCA released a 50 Greatest Hits box set compilation of her work. Was this like her fourth or fifth Greatest Hits?
Yeah, except this one was a box set, not just a Greatest Hits album. You know.
Right.
Semantics matter when you're doing box sets.
That's right. 2009, she released Keep On Loving You, and no, it wasn't an REO Speedwagon cover. Her first single on the new Valerie label, Strange, was released. Yeah, and it's at this point, I mean, I'm kind of noticing it prior to this, but it's at this point that I'm actually writing in the notes of our spreadsheet. It's just formula after formula. 90% of the choruses end with the band stopping and are saying the title of the song. I kind of talked about that earlier. This was her first solo studio album in 6 years, which is crazy because Duets was the year before, and it was a big gap before with Room to Breathe before that. Consider Me Gone spent 4 weeks at number one. It was the first multi-week number one since Our Song by Taylor Swift.
That's back when Taylor Swift was still a country star.
Remember that? Remember those heady days of 2009? 2010, All the Woman I Am, or Women I Am, was great, generally well-received. And at the CMAs that year, she covered If I Were a Boy by Beyonce. I'll talk about that in a little bit.
I'm sure you will.
In 2015, 5 year gap this time, she released Love Somebody, another in the long string of hits for her. It was released in April, and by October, it had sold over 170,000 copies.
Yeah. This is nuts that she's able to do this in 6 months, because there are artists now who can't sell one song in 5 years that make that kind of totally, movement.
Totally true. Yeah. I mean, she's got so much foundation for her fans that, just the mention of her releasing a new album is enough to make them place their pre-orders.
Go ahead and read your thing there too, because it's funny.
I already talked about this. But it said, seriously? Every album has the stupid ballad she sung. She got drunk last night. She turned 50 today, the day she got divorced.
All she knows for sure, she ain't coming back.
It's funny. I noticed it, but I kind of ignored it. Now you're saying this, and I really, it now makes me regret all the time I spent with Reba over the last week.
I kind of want to go album by album and put in this, you know, get the name of every she sung in there and actually make one massive long sentence about she got drunk because she turned 50 on the day she got divorced and she thinks his name was John.
And she bought a pink guitar.
And she probably think, oh, that's just called pink guitar. Come on. I'm there's enough she songs that we don't even need to stray from that that requirement. Also, 2016 saw the release of her third Christmas album, My Kind of Christmas. The other two were other people's kinds of
actually,
Christmas.
Actually, in this one, it's just her rolling around in giant piles of cash underneath the Christmas tree.
that's right. This is My Kind of Christmas. Mine too, actually. And then last year, 2017, Sing It Now, Songs of Faith and Hope. And this was her first gospel album. It's a two-disc album.
and now she's Colonel Sanders.
Now she's the new Colonel Sanders.
I like how they're on the same line. Her first gospel album, and now she's Colonel Sanders.
But it really wasn't intended to be like a continuation of the previous note, but I kind of like that. She re-released her 2016 Christmas album with guests singing with her in 2017. So
I didn't
rehash duets.
Yeah, I kind of threw that in at the last minute because I was reading it and trying to figure out how she could re-release that album and kind of get away with it.
Yeah.
But she did. And that's so Reba.
That's so Reba. And, you know, she's released so many albums, you can forgive her for doing... And I don't want to call it cutting corners because it's a duet album of songs that she's previously released. So,
and also,
good for her.
And also, I mean, if she has the wherewithal to bring in friends of hers so they can get some exposure and get some people listening to their stuff, it might be draw other ears and eyes to their direction. I mean, if she has that in her power and that's something she's willing to do for other people, then, you know, God bless her for it.
Power to her. Yeah, exactly.
Goes to her being kind of nice at the same point of all the other things that she's done really well.
Yep. There's no doubt in my mind that she's a genuine top notch person. You know, a spunky spitfire with a heart of gold.
And her name was Fancy.
All right. So tell me some of her statistics and general notes.
Okay. I broke this up into a couple things. I have general notes and statistics, but then I also talked about some of the other things she's done. So
perfect. Okay.
She's got the second most wins for the Academy of Country Music Top Female Award with 7. She's won 12 AMAs. She's the 4-time winner of the CMA Female Vocalist of the Year. She's had solo number ones over 4 decades. That would be the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. Which is a rare, I think Duran Duran did that too, didn't they? Mm-hmm. 4 decades of hits.
I know the Bee Gees did.
Yeah.
It had a number one single in every decade from the 60s through the 2000s.
Oh, wow.
60s, 70s, 80s, maybe 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
Maybe 4 decades.
Yeah. She's got 50 CMAs. I wonder what her mantle looks like. How many mantles do you have to have if you have 50 CMAs?
She's got a mantle in every room. Yeah, no kidding, right?
At some point, she just throws them into a bag and puts them in her basement. And then she's got 48 ACM awards. So wow. She's got more bling than any 9 rappers put together.
Yes, lots of accolades.
Yeah, and all well-deserved because she works her tail off. And just by looking at what we just went through, she works her tail off of releasing albums and doing a TV show and doing all these other things, which leads me to movies and TV that she's worked on. Mm-hmm. We've made jokes about it. She was in Tremors. Mm-hmm. She was in the movie Maverick, which I'd totally forgotten about.
I forgot, too, that she was in that. You think of Jodie Foster and Mel Gibson and James Garner, but you don't think about Reba making a...
Yeah.
I mean, there were a lot of country cameos in that,
I think, what's-his-face, the gambler, was in that briefly, too.
Kenny Rogers, yeah.
Maybe he was just roasting in this corner, so I don't know. And she was in North, Little Rascals, One Night at McCool's. She did voice work for Fox and the Hound 2. She was in Charlotte's Web, Romance and Republics, and a line, and one of those off Land Before Time sequels. And then she also had her self-titled sitcom. But she was also in the movie The Gambler Returns. She sang at WrestleMania 7 or 8.
Okay.
Which, you know, God bless her, because it feels like everyone has to cross with WrestleMania at some point.
Right. All roads lead to WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, if our president got stone cold stunned at WrestleMania, then we all have dreams of getting to WrestleMania as performers.
Right.
And then she also performed in live theater in Annie Get Your Gun and South Pacific, which I can totally see her doing Annie Get Your Gun. I would have loved to.
Oh, totally.
I'd love to get a hold of that soundtrack or her doing that show.
I'm quick on the trigger with targets not much bigger than a pinpoint. I'm number one, but my score with a feller is lower than a 7.
I remember the billboards for it. I remember her doing the Broadway tour with that. Like it, absolutely remember that.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get to her Stairway to Heaven songs. You get to see Reba McEntire live in concert and the thousands of songs that she's released, many that contain the word she in the title. What songs do you expect that are guarantees that you're going to be hearing in concert?
I'm a Survivor.
'Cause your bags are packed and I ain't crying. You're walking out and I'm not trying to change your mind.
Can't get the blues. Can't even get the blues. The night the lights went out in Georgia, and Fancy.
Yeah. Yep. And number one.
It's Fancy.
It is Fancy. That's right. Yeah. It's Fancy followed by Is There Life Out There? Does He Love You? And then The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia. The Fear of Being Alone. I'm a Survivor. You mentioned that one. Because of You, which is the song that she did a duet with her daughter-in-law, Kelly Clarkson, the cover of her song. The Greatest Man I Never Knew. Why Haven't I Heard From You? That one I knew. And Consider Me Gone, Whoever's in New England tied for 10th place.
Yeah, I'm sorry that I have picked the Stairway to Heaven song 2 weeks in a row. Last week was totally like out of the blue. I had no idea with Kanye that was going to be it.
Hey, no, I mean, you nailed it. That's good. That's the
no,
the
as goal. Far as putting it on our, as far as putting it on our, my pick list, that's what I'm apologizing for.
Oh, gotcha.
For.
Yeah. Again, you know, it's out of our, this music is absolutely out of our wheelhouse, so we can easily be forgiven for picking the song that, for actually liking the song that we,
yeah,
well, that is their most popular.
And to be fair, I think I claimed this back when we put her on our list originally for the season. I claimed that song.
Right. Oh, right. You totally did. Like it was the first thing. It was the first thing on here before even any of the notes. Now let's get to our cover section here. Here's where we talk about who we'd like to hear them cover. And she's done so many covers. So it's a little bit trickier to kind of pull something out, not necessarily that she hasn't covered before, but something maybe a little bit different from what she's covered before. My choice, and it's funny, I was thinking about something like the other one I had thought of was One by U2.
That's good.
Kind of for similar reasons. But the main one that I settled on was Sometimes It Snows in April, which was from Parade, the soundtrack to Under the Cherry Moon by Prince. Mm-hmm. From all accounts, a horrible movie. I haven't seen it yet. I'm a fan of Purple Rain, so I don't know if I want to see Under the Cherry Moon and break my...
Is it under... No, the other one's Graffiti Bridge, right?
Graffiti Bridge, just an album, but that was okay. The one with Raspberry Beret.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, Sometimes It Snows in April is, I think, the closing song from the album. It is the closing song from the album. And it's basically the story from the movie is about these two shysters that, are pulling cons and stuff like that. They meet a woman and these two, who are brothers, by the way, kind of dirty, rotten scoundrels, but with brothers, they both fall for the same woman. And Prince's character gets shot by the other guy. And it's a song about Christopher Tracy, Prince's character, dying. And it's sung by Prince, but it's from the perspective of his brother, which is interesting. Country theme, right? Murder. Sure. Yeah. Sure, it works.
If the video is filmed in front of a trailer, you got 2 out of 3 down.
I don't think it is. But there's two reasons I really like. I would really like to hear Reba cover this song. Number one, there is this killer chord change right in the middle of the lyric or in the chorus that totally takes me by surprise every time I hear it. And I feel like so much of the music that Reba's released follows the 12-bar boogie, the A-B-A-B or A-B-C-B style of chord progression.
It's rhyming couplets or a limerick that she's singing in.
Right. It kind of is. Yeah. But hearing something that's got such an unpredictable chord, a chord just out of left field, is like, oh, wow. Love that part. Would be so cool to hear. Second, it's not like an empowerment song. There's no truck formula kind of thing to it, other than the murder. It's just a really tragically beautiful song.
other than the pause in the show last night, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the show?
Right. Other than the murder, it's, you know, but I mean, it's true. I mean, there's, this would be out of her comfort range for a topic for a song.
Yeah. No. And it's good. And once again, you seem to put more thought into this than I did. I just was thinking about Reba's voice doing something a little bit different. And you point for something very unique and interesting.
Well, Hammond, I do really like cover songs, so it just comes with the territory.
So I picked Pink, So What?
I like this choice. I like this choice a lot.
And because it plays to actually Reba wearing a true leather jacket in all the leather jacket senses. And I'd love to see a Reba McEntire with absolutely no to give. And is totally pissed off.
Yeah. I like that too. I think Pink is a great direction for it because it would be that cover, that pop crossover cover. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it could be, there are so many different Pink songs. It could be that Blow Me One Last Kiss. And I mean, So What's a great choice as well.
I mean, I wouldn't I even thought about a No Doubt cover for her. Kind of a ska tinged. What's that one? That was her huge hit. It was more of a ballad.
Not Don't Speak.
Yeah, Don't Speak. Yeah, Don't Speak. I'd love to hear her try that one.
That would be interesting. It would be that vulnerable side of Reba that we don't get as much of.
Mm-hmm. It'd be a very first person-y song instead of one of her she
songs. The she's in her songs are always very vulnerable, but yeah, her personal stuff isn't as vulnerable as those. Great. Well, let's get to our playlists. This is where we pick five songs that we like. It's hard for me not to crack up when I say that, because it was so difficult this time.
It two really songs was. He liked and three that he tolerated because three empty spaces made him nervous.
There were a couple that I went back to and said, you know, I did kind of like this song, but you're not going to be surprised to see how many covers are in this list. Starting with this first one, Right Time of the Night. It was from her Oklahoma Girl album.
The stars are waking above. It's the right time of the night for making love.
Came out the same year as the Pete McCann original, 1977, but it was Jennifer Warnes that turned it into a humongous hit in the late 70s. And honestly, Reba's version, if it was the first version you heard, it easily could have been the hit single. But it's the right time of the night. Anyway, I think her version's good, and the country flavor that it's in is appropriate.
Sounded a little bit like Zappa covering it.
It's the right time of the night for. Number two, Face to Face, from the If You See Him album.
Have blue eyes, I expected blue eyes. That's how I pictured you would be. And you don't have long hair. I thought that
you know, it was really just kind of like all right, I kind of like the subject matter. It's the wife meeting the mistress, and they team up against the guy. First Wives Club kind of material. But it's just remarkable to me because it kind of broke up the monotony that I'd heard so far. It's like, oh, I like the direction right here. So kind of cool. Next one, We're All Alone, from her So Good Together album.
Neath the waves, through the caves of ours, long forgotten now, we're all alone, we're all alone.
It's again another cover that I like. But they should have used So Good Together instead of Reba Duets. So Good Together would have been a great title for the Duets album. Mm-hmm. I thought. And I'm finding the covers are only slightly more tolerable than the rest of the pap. Talked about it a minute ago, but the song If I Were a Boy, which came from the All the Women I Am album.
I drink beer with the guys and chase after girls. I'd kick it with who I wanted and I'd never get confronted.
It's a cover of a song by Beyonce. Beyonce, a very bold choice for Reba to cover. It's not your typical genre that she likes to stay in when it comes to cover songs.
So here's where we have another crossover collaboration, and Beyonce covers Fancy.
There you go. See, that's doable, right?
Yeah.
Or I think the day she got a divorce, or she got drunk today, or whatever. Either one of those. I'd much rather hear Beyonce cover that. I think that'd be a fun one. But yeah, I mean, it's the songs that have been recorded by other artists rather than written by a committee. Mm-hmm. I think are the things that I like a lot better. And then finally, Kathy's Clown. Now, originally done by the Everly Brothers. Again, it's another cover. But what she does is something she hasn't done on other covers, which is change the perspective of the song. In the original version by the Everly Brothers, you know, it's the guy talking about how he is Kathy's clown. He's dating Kathy, and she just treats him like a fool and takes advantage of his niceness and generosity. And in this case, in Reba's version, she's third person. She's telling it from her perspective, but she's a woman who is attracted to the guy that Kathy is stringing along, and she's trying to convince him to leave Kathy and quit being Kathy's clown, which I really like. I like those. It's almost like the answer songs of the 50s and 60s, mm-hmm. where you'd have the response. And I kind of like the fact that she did that.
Yeah.
I die each time I hear the sound. They're saying, here he comes. He's Kathy's clown. You know you've got to stand.
So those are my five.
Alrighty. So we've
no bonus track this time around for me.
Oh, shucks. So we've talked about this. I picked Fancy. It's from Rumor Has It. It's a hit. It's your Stairway to Heaven song. I don't care. This was the first Reba song I heard. Mm-hmm. I was living in Norfolk, Nebraska at the time and living in a basement. And I heard it and I loved it. And I it's all I can say is when I think of Reba, the only thing, two things I think about are this song and Tremors. So
I had to
pick it just because it's so intrinsic to my identification with her as a performer.
You planted your flag in this one immediately, which is fine. Totally
yeah.
fine.
Yeah. The next one I picked was Pink Guitar from Keep On Loving You.
She saw it in the window just a calling out her name. She mowed the grass, took out the trash and saved, saved, saved. Bought it on a Monday, had a gig on Friday night. In the garage in front of her mom, she came alive. She likes to play. She loves to rock. Yeah, she's
It's a good old rock and roll. This is rock, what is Jukebox Hero in country, yeah. in country terms.
Yeah, it totally is. Mm-hmm.
And I really liked it as this kind of country song. We've heard this song a million times, and Jukebox Hero is probably the most notable version of it. And I really, really enjoyed this version of it. Just, living out your country or rock and roll dreams with a guitar. And then I just picked Turn on the Radio, which is not a cover of the Autograph song, Turn Up the Radio.
Turn up the radio. Oh, darn.
This is from All the Woman I Am.
No good two-timing lies coming out of your mouth. You played brought you down. Broke my heart, tore it apart. Look who's got the last line.
I really enjoyed the rhythm of it. It was far, far more pop than I was expecting. But it was a really fun song, and I'm okay with that because by this point I was kind of worn on kind of the standard Reba stuff. So when I found something, it kind of reached up. I grabbed it because I kind of figured if I didn't, you were going to, and then I'd be stuck. Because mm-hmm. I sent you that text that said, I think I might have picked all the good songs.
Yeah. Fortunately, you didn't.
Then I picked Is There Life Out There? This is from the album For My Broken Heart. I actually remembered this video as soon as I heard the song. And the reason I picked it is, one, I like the song. It's about not giving up on your dreams. But two, it's got Huey Lewis is playing her husband in the video. And you know what? If it's got Huey Lewis in it, it's all right with me. I'll hang on to that one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then I picked a cover, The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia.
That's the night that the lights went out in Georgia. That's the night that they hung it in.
from the album For My Broken Heart. And it's a really good version of a good old-fashioned storytelling song. And I like it when country does this storytelling thing. Fancy does it. Pink Guitar did it. Is There Life Out There does it. There's a lot of these storytelling, and I really enjoy like a good storytelling song, like Camouflage and some of these old, you know, by Walla Voodoo or Walla Voodoo's solo singer, whatever his name is.
Yes. Oh, shoot. It was in my head and then just kind of vaporized.
See, and I'm being silent, unlike another co-host of yours.
I know you are. You're being very, thank you for doing that. Although
it's not helping.
Got a lot of good. It's done me. Stan Ridgway.
There we go.
It without looking anything up.
There you go.
That's a great, I love Camouflage. It's such a great storytelling song.
Yeah. And there are lots of those, and some of them are better than others, but I really enjoy the crafting of a story where you can use the refrain, it's still part of the story, and it doesn't feel like you're just shoehorning in a chorus in the middle of a story. So I for whoever's writing these songs, I really admire that in them. So there's that.
Did she do a cover of Ode to Billy Joe by Bobby Gentry, or am I just visualizing it? Am I just imagining it? Because it feels like that's another another perfect example of a great storytelling song that she would do.
I feel like we listened to about 500 Reba songs, and for me to pick out one storytelling country song, you're asking a lot of me.
Okay, you're right. Okay. I might put that as like a secondary backup song you'd like to hear her cover if she hasn't done it, because it feels like that's right in the same line as Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, there are lots and lots of songs I'd love to hear her do. Like, I'd love to hear her be the narrator in kind of a country tinged version of Joseph the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I'd love to hear her sing I Know Him So Well from Chess. I'd love to hear her sing Lord knows any number of songs out there. Just to see what she could do with the style and the kind of push the genre that she kind of fits into. But you know, she's got what she does, and vocally I love it.
So here's something I didn't know. Fancy is a cover.
Really?
And it's a cover of Bobby Gentry, the woman who did Ode to Billy Joe, but Reba never covered Ode to Billy Joe, but she did cover, obviously she covered Fancy.
I had no idea Fancy was a cover.
I didn't either. I had no idea. The only Bobby Gentry song that I knew about was
when's the Reba cover story coming? We've got lots of material now.
Don't hold your breath. Yeah. But anyway.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's not happening. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for our coverage and our gentle destruction of Reba. No, not destruction. Our I don't even want to say dismissal. She's a great singer. I think she's just been given material that doesn't suit her as well.
Or maybe it suits her, but it doesn't suit us.
Yeah. Maybe.
Because I'll take ownership of not liking this. I won't push it on her. I'll push it off on me. I'll own the fact that I think the music's a little bit white toasty and formulaic. Yeah. But her voice is the only thing that makes it even listenable, because she's got a great set of pipes on her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally true. All right. Well, let's talk about what we're doing next episode. Again, we're kind of breaking with the artist and singer and performer bandwagon, and kind of going to a genre show. Again, we do one of these every season, and this season it's going to be ska. Speaking of ska and No Doubt and stuff like that, this is going to be a fun one because there's so many eras, of ska, the tone stuff and the more modern ska and all of the ska cover stuff. This is going to be such a fun one to do. Yeah.
My sweet spot is the third wave with all the horns and the punk influences.
Yeah. Yeah. Selector and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or was that second?
I think they're second. I'm thinking more like, Stretch Armstrong, the Boss Tones, Attaboy Skip.
Okay. Yep. I think I might nestle more in the second. Well, I can't wait to find out where where my ska sweet spot is.
Yep.
I'm expecting, like I said, Selector and the Specials and stuff like that to be my wheelhouse. But we're going to find out. It's going to be fun. We're all going to find out together, aren't we? Hey, if you want to email us, please do. soundographypodcast@gmail.com is the email address we want you to use. You can follow us on Twitter. That handle is @thesoundography. Soundography.com for everything else. You'll find this episode, the show notes, and all the stuff that goes along with this episode, our playlist, links to buy one of the Reba Greatest Hits albums, probably that that double disc 35 track thing. That, wait,
how about just Reba number ones? We'll go with that one. It's an easy.
Oh, we could go with number ones. I like that.
Reba number ones.
You'll also find a link to our Patreon. We love getting your support of the show. And even if it's a buck or 50 cents or whatever, we love it and we appreciate it. And it goes right into the production and making of this show. And of course, if you want to review, want to leave a review, you can do that anywhere you get the show, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, wherever you get the review, or you can just post a message on our site at soundography.com and let us know what you like, what you don't like. So much great feedback from the Tragically Hip episode. So thank you so much for that. That was a fun episode to put together. And Hammond and I learned so much about Tragically Hip. So happy to happy that that resonated with so many people. So thank you so much for that. Anything else, Hammond, before we say goodnight?
I'm wondering if there's a musical version of the Bechdel test, because I don't think she'd pass.
I don't think so. It's the song would be called She Was Talking to Other Women About Her Man. And I'll break it right there. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.